Welcome to Stepping Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms both in the system and within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and I'm very happy today to have as my guest Father Bill O'Donnell. Father Bill O'Donnell is a Catholic priest, a parish priest at St. Joseph the Worker Church here in Berkeley, California. And I've known about you for a long time, Father Bill, because you're an activist, and so am I. And you're also an elder. You've been doing this for many, many, many years. I know that you've been arrested, the last I heard was 224 times. You most recently spent 6 months in prison. You were arrested in Fort Benning, Georgia, for having crossed a line at the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, which used to be called the School of the Americas, where terrorists are trained to work in Latin America, Latin American terrorists. Since we use that word, it's become so popular in our daily lives, I'm going to use that word. Anyway, it's really a thrill to finally be talking to you here.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you for inviting me.
So how did you get started in all this? Tell us a little bit about yourself, first off, because it's the most unusual for anybody, much less a priest, to be doing what you're doing, have been doing for all these years.
Well, if I'm going to take the gospel seriously or the prophets seriously in the Old Testament, then I have to put my body on the line. And I first began to protest publicly for the farm workers. Cesar Chavez was for me an impossible figure. I was born and raised in on a ranch, and I thought it was always impossible to organize farm workers. I've done farm working. And as a matter of fact, it was so hard and difficult and awful that it drove me into the seminary to get the hell out of there. And then I learned how to be a Catholic. And so these issues...
Were you raised Catholic?
I was, yeah, Irish-American. We were cultural Catholics more than... taking it seriously, although my parents were very moralistic. They always taught us to do the right thing. But I thought we could be pagans and do that, you know. But to have a figure like those figures of prophets and Jesus and the gave the spirit of truth and the spirit of justice a body. And so it's a human thing that, you know, to test the forces that enslave people, that exploit people. And so when there's an issue, I can't help but join the people who are protesting in order to change and to make a better world. Mm-hmm. And I'm also very taken with nonviolence. I'm a very violent person, and I was raised in a violent culture. We always settle things with our fists. And that's how Irish do it, usually in a bar. But there's always somebody bigger than me, than I. And Martin Luther King came along, and he became the American Gandhi, if you will. And Gandhi learned his theology from the gospel, from the mountain sermon, when Jesus proclaimed his reign of God and nonviolence. And I thought, wow. And then King proved the power of the nonviolent direct action. And I was very taken with that as a way to live out gospel. Mm-hmm. And so the civil rights movement came along. I began to march and to speak out against racism and militarism that the governments use in order to keep people in line and conforming to what their policies are, which are usually totally economic. It's all about money. We're a money culture. And consumerism is the thing that feeds that addiction to power. And so I simply do it from the pulpit in the streets and newspaper articles and telephone. I do delegations to lobbyists, to CEOs, and try to embarrass them into doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, huh?
Well, it never actually works immediately. But I think I have to throw the pebble into the pond to make the ripple. And maybe it'll turn into a wave and move the shore a bit. I do believe in civil disobedience as a way of moving power. What are they going to do with you? Throw you in jail? So what? And if I think we can put more people in jail, in prison, then they're going to be forced to change their exploitative policies because jails and prisons cost too much. I've been arrested, now it's 227 times, and most times they drop the charges because we cost too much. It's all about money, not about justice or about the law. We just cost too much. And I think if enough people go out in the street and protest and in a nonviolent, direct action way, then it's going to affect the policymakers, the legislators, as well as the board of directors of big corporations.
Well, that's interesting that you say that people are not jailed oftentimes because it costs too much, because it's certainly not stopping the imprisoning of a lot of people in this country. Of course, we have this huge prison industry in California here, which gets more money than schools as the schools are falling apart. The prisons are being built.
And that's why it's so important to jam up the prisons even more and force them and let the public know what really the score is, because governments have to have police and prisons in order to force people to do their will. But if the will is so stupid and not cost effective, if people will realize, then that's when the vote has become so important. There's a new campaign coming out now because of 9/11, because of the Bush administration, because of Iraq, because of Afghanistan. There's a big movement starting now to register voters, 40 million new voters, to make sure that the new regime will not be as crazy and as violent as this Bush administration is. And that's the great hope, because we got the vote, we got our mouth, and we got our feet. And if enough people vote in their best interest, that to see to it that their tax dollar is used in a human way, not in an inhuman way, by killing other people who don't agree with us. And so there's hope. I only do this because I do have hope.
And we got to keep our eyes on the how the voting works in terms of corruption, because we're learning that they're just layers and layers and layers of corruption. And, of course, a lot of us know. I don't know if everybody knows what happened in Florida. Well, we got some vacuuming upstairs. That's okay. Just want to explain what this sound is.
You want me to go upstairs? Well, I agree, and because the fight is never over. The evil is always going to find a way of manipulating and trying to get around doing, you know, what is human, what is right. And so when that becomes an issue, we have to protest that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Father Bill O'Donnell, let's talk a little bit about your last arrest and your time in prison. Maybe you'd like to, or if you would, explain to people about the School of the Americas, why you did this. I mean, how many times have you been arrested or been involved in the School of the Americas demonstrations to shut down the School of the Americas?
Four times. Gone, traveled all the way to Georgia to test the government, to expose the infamous School of the Americas. President Bush, the resident
Select.
Of the White House, Bush said we have to close all terrorist camps. And so we're going to Fort Benning to close that camp for terrorists, was called the School of the Americas, and now called the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security and Cooperation, which makes no sense at all. But our protest did force them to change the name, but then the experts say it's a cosmetic change. It still operates as a school for terrorists. It's a school that recruits soldiers from Central and South American countries and has to train them in tactics of low-intensity conflict, how to go into a village and disappear or torture the mayor, for example, or leaders, church leaders, health care leaders, lawyers, and how to intimidate the populace in order that they will not take up revolution in order to change a plutocracy kind of government, the rule of the wealthy. How this all started was very interesting. In World War II, after the United States conquered the Nazis, they arrested a Nazi expert at torture and disappearing people in Eastern Europe, and he trained the U.S. Army how to do that and those tactics. And the School of the Americas started in Panama in 1946. It goes back as far as that. And when Panama got its independence and kicked the school out, it went to Fort Benning in Georgia to continue their work. And today, Colombia supplies the biggest number of soldiers to be trained in terrorist tactics of torture. They're trained in how to use rape as a way of intimidating the populace, how to disappear people, torture people, and murder people.
Well, this is so different than what most Americans think, of course. They think all these, or at least I think so. I don't know. I live here in Berkeley, very close to your church, actually, and so I always call it the bubble of Berkeley, but I know that the media is so distorts things. There's even the left media sometimes. That most people don't have any idea that all this horrible stuff that they hear about originates in the United States oftentimes. It's kind of hard to let in the truth of the matter.
You know, the United States government is very, very good at keeping secrets. Mm-hmm. The CIA, the FBI, it takes years to uncover these dark things that they're capable of. For example, I've done protesting at the Livermore Laboratory where they design and nuclear weapons. We don't know what's really going on out there. And I believe if we expose that and try to embarrass them by civil disobedience enough that if enough people find out what's actually going on out there, they would never allow it to happen through the vote again. And if they discover what's going on at the School of the Americas, they would never allow we Americans, the people would never want to be responsible for the torture and the murders that we are, as a government, responsible for.
Well, I think that's true. And of course, just yesterday, the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, voted that there could be even more narrowing of the media. So I guess the only way we can get out information is to get it out ourselves. What have you found in your moving around? Well, it must have been interesting, including awful, to be in prison for 6 months. You must have met people that you might not otherwise have met. I don't know, but you probably meet a lot of different kinds of people. If you'd share a little bit about how that was, it'd be great.
Well, the guys I met, there were 130 of us in this Costco-type warehouse. They were all white-collar, nonviolent criminals. And their sin, if you will, was greed. You know, people ripped off the government, insurance companies, and banks for millions and millions of dollars. There were doctors and dentists, and there were stockbrokers, CEOs, heads of big companies, accountants, lawyers, and interestingly enough, is I was the only one that admitted to guilt.
Really? Wow!
And because they felt they were set up by the federal prosecutors, and I believe some of them were, and because my, for example, my bunkie, the guy that occupied the bunk below me. He lent $100,000 to his friend, and his friend went and illegally used it, and they blamed him. He had to know what his friend was doing. He got 4 years. Anyway, that's a kind of a typical story. Health people were ripping off the Medi-Cal, and those kind of criminals, you know, they wanted to get rich fast, which is part of our culture, you know. You know, it's a given that success equals riches, and why not? Because the government cheats, and everybody cheats and lies. And so it's all part of the American way of life. And they were shocked when the government hypocritically come after them. And they're doing time for that, but it's a crime when it's just evil when you rip people from their wives and their families and their lovers and from their children, when they could be at home making all this money they were supposed to have taken from the government in taxes and not paying it taxes. They could be at home making money for the government. They would be glad to do that rather than spend all this time away from their families, and because it costs a taxpayer from $30,000 to $40,000 a year to put these guys in prison, which doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. It's so stupid.
Right, and they were in a camp, not the worst of the prisons. Of course, there's a huge, some like 70% of the people in prison, in more high security prisons included, are nonviolent offenders, I think, really a huge amount. Yes. And it's to the yeah.
Here's a very interesting point that the public's not really aware of. Most crime, violent crime, is done under the influence of alcohol or drugs. And you know, morally, people are not responsible. They're responsible for using, for sure. And they have to, but when they could be in rehabilitation programs, in recovery programs, it would be so less expensive and so beneficial to the health of the community. Mm-hmm. But just to put people away, salt them away, and they become worse, and they learn more and more evil ways of living.
Because they have to survive, in a way.
To survive, yeah, which is almost suicidal, if you will. And so the system has to be totally revamped. And again, the only hope I have is that enough people go out and vote and vote the right kind of legislators so we can change the system. A new brand of judges that will understand the causes of human behavior and then act accordingly.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to say, because you said so many violent crimes are committed with drugs and alcohol. I a long time ago learned from an interview that I was doing about guns that a huge, I think 80% of all the crimes, murders and crimes committed with guns involved alcohol. So before people jump too quickly on the drug issue, I just wanted to make that clear that alcohol is a really big part of violence, and it's quite legal, of course.
And because people are trying to deal with their rage, and they drink and use alcohol as a sedative to calm them down. Actually, it's like flame on a fire. It's like fuel on a fire. And they get out of control when they're trying to feel better, and then when something triggers them, that rage comes back, and they get out of control, and they hurt themselves, or they hurt others and kill others, kill themselves. I'm involved in Berkeley here in a rehabilitation program, and we have these addicts that have been on the street for years, and they're beginning their recovery life. And in 5 years, we have seen about 600 guys get back into health, into recovery. It's just miracles are happening. And their criminal records are longer than my arm. Mm-hmm. And San Quentin, Folsom, and so on. But now they're leading beautiful lives. They've become human. But their crimes have always been under the influence of cocaine, heroin, or alcohol.
Mm-hmm. And to what do you attribute this great success that you're having here with this program?
Well, hardball or hard, tough love. It's the Alcoholics Anonymous program, NA and AA. And then all kinds of counseling. We use acupuncture. We use exercise, diet. And we provide housing and we provide jobs, but it's the essence of healing is the group. They don't even know how it happens, but people become well when they. That's how church should happen. Mm-hmm. Is if people come together and that spirit, it begins to emerge and it heals the body wounds, psychological wounds, and so on. I don't know how it works, but it does, because people radically change their lives.
Well, that's great. There's so many things to do. And, of course, with all these cuts, and I notice that you're having, or did it just happen already? Anyway, something about all the cuts that are happening and the safety net. I mean, there's going to be no safety net left whatsoever in terms of helping people, and it's just really awful. And I'd like to know... Father Bill O'Donnell, in our little remaining time here, a few things. Like if you've gotten any troubles from the church, I know you have a very big Latin American population, Spanish-speaking population at the church here, and one of your services on Sunday morning is in Spanish, and maybe more than that. And I see it's, you know, very community-based church. You have housing, you have a school. So what about the larger Catholic Church or the hierarchy? Have they given you troubles about your politics?
Yeah, ever since I moved out of the pulpit and went to the street, I've been kicked out of three parishes. And they sent me to Berkeley to get rid of me, to send you to your, quote, your own people, unquote.
Well, it's good for us that they did.
The bishop that did that, he was an old-time bishop, and he was living in the Middle Ages, and he meant well, but he wasn't in touch. He didn't have the experience of the working people. He didn't have the experience of the street. And now this present bishop, we're old friends, and he never interferes, and I appreciate him very much. The new bishop's coming. I don't know how he's going to feel. It doesn't matter because, I just got to do what I do because I get my inspiration from the people, from addicts, from people suffering in prison, from poor people. They're my inspiration because I am them. I connect. I am not hierarchy. I'm not rich. I'm not a politician, or the bad kind, and I am a politician with a small p. But let's see, where am I going on this? I've been exiled to Berkeley for 30 years, and I'm very happy here. The Spanish-speaking population, that's because of Father George Crespin, who's the pastor here. He's Hispanic himself, and he's so open, and he's a real patron, a padre, and the people are very much attracted to him. He's doing great work.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, what do you think is a big issue, real quick here, that we have to deal with now, and what are you, or if you have any next plans? We only have a couple minutes left, but.
The big one is saving America's soul. That's big, big, big. And it's one-on-one. I talk to you and you talk to the next person, and we build from the very base. We build an America that we can be proud of, you know, that we authentically, with our power to share with the rest of the world what we have, our skills and our hearts, and not our fists. I think that's who is America, and we're viewed by Europeans and especially by Arabs, not Arabs but Muslims, yes, Arabs, as monsters because of our overwhelming power. We're a superpower, the only one around. But there's another superpower building, and that's the Third World protest against this evil that is America in its foreign policies. Mm-hmm. And so we hope to change that and show the world that we're just like them and that we're all connected together as human beings, and we'll make this earth a paradise or die trying.
Okay, well, I really appreciate your time, Father Bill O'Donnell from the St. Joseph the Worker Church here in Berkeley. And I want to say that along with church services, you also have a lot of, different political things going on. I've been many times to your church to hear a speech by somebody who's talking about the kind of political activism that you're involved with. And I know you help a lot of people. So thank you very, very much.
You're welcome. And anytime you want to talk, okay. I'm open. I'll be ready.
Cool. Now we're neighbors. My name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening. To order a copy of the program you just heard, write down the following information. The email is sue@suesupriano.com. That's Sue, S-U-E, at Sue Supriano, SUESUPRIANO.com. Or the telephone is 510-883-1979. That's 510-883-1979.